I'm Ryan Miller, Crops Extension Educator. Earlier this morning, we recorded an episode of the Strategic Farming Field Notes program. Strategic Farming Field Notes is a weekly program addressing current crop production topics. A live webinar is hosted at 8 a.m. on Wednesdays throughout the cropping season. During the live webinar, participants can join in the discussion and get questions answered. An audio recording of the live program is released following the webinar via podcast platforms. Thanks, and remember to tune in weekly for a discussion on current cropping and crop management topics.
Welcome to today's Strategic Farming Field Notes program from University of Minnesota Extension. These sessions are brought to you by University of Minnesota Extension and generous support from your farm families through the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council and the Minnesota Corn Research and Promotion Council. So we're happy to have you join us today for updates on alfalfa weevil and nutrient management. My name is Claire LeCan, University of Minnesota Extension Educator in Crops, and we welcome Anthony Hansen, Extension Educator for Integrated Pest Management, and then Brad Carlson, Extension Educator in Nutrient Management and Water Quality. With that, I'll turn it over to Anthony with our alfalfa weevil updates.
Sure, thanks, Claire. And yeah, we're kind of flipping the script a little bit here today, so I'll be kind of talking more about content this time instead of hosting. But yeah, a lot of times this time of year, we are talking about what's going on in the alfalfa, especially with alfalfa weevil. So that's one where, depending on where you are in the state, that's going to matter based on just how far along the crop is. Some folks, depending on what system you're in, they've already done their first cutting. They're looking to second versus here in about central Minnesota, I'd say we're, you know, just starting to start take that first crop a lot of places, or just starting to think about cutting pretty soon here. So when you're out there scouting, in those cases, you're going to find some alfalfa weevil larvae. But as you head further down south, I know Bruce Potter's mentioned that he's found some larger larvae and definitely some fields that should have been cut a little earlier. And we'll get into that in a little bit and kind of what's working with alfalfa weevil there. So I, in general, don't have a lot of new news about alfalfa weevil in terms of what we can do differently about it compared to previous years. But it's one of these that's a really good example of integrated pest management, because we kind of need every tool in the toolbox we have for this pest here. Because insecticides, looking at some challenges there. And there are some other issues with this one too. It makes it a little bit trickier of a pest to deal with there economically. So I think just to start off, if you haven't scouted for alfalfa weevil before, a lot of times what we'll do is you'll take a sweep net just to see if you have adults out there. You might find a few larvae in that sweep net, but we usually don't use that for determining actual thresholds. What we'll do instead, and it's a little bit more accurate this way, if you go out into a field, just bring a 5-gallon bucket, and you want to be cutting stems and then basically beating those plants in the bucket, it's a little bit easier way to actually capture some of those larvae out there and see what kind of counts you can get. So if you're going to be looking up any of our online resources through Extension for alfalfa weevil thresholds, all you need is your stem height, average number of weevil larvae per stem. And from that, if you have your insecticide costs in there, that's pretty much all you need to read those tables, as well as what you value your alfalfa at. So there's a few different things that go into play there. But if you're at a point right now where you're thinking about cutting in the next few days, don't worry about spraying for alfalfa weevil. Think about more managing that stubble afterwards, because part of it is a lot of our insecticides, they have a limited window for a pre-harvest interval. So some are just not legal to apply if you're going to be cutting pretty soon here. So you got to keep that in mind a little bit. But one of the big questions too is pyrethroids. And we're now pretty confident that there's probably resistance out there, but it hasn't been confirmed in Minnesota yet. It's definitely been seen in Western states, and that's making things pretty tough for our management strategies right now. So if you do suspect pyrethroid resistance in your field, if you have a history of failures with those products, so that gets into ones like Warrior, you get in Bifenthrin and a few others, those products, you know, might be at risk here. Some of the other ones we can use, we have organophosphates. Chlorpyrifos is back just for this year, as far as we know. But there's only a few products out there that we know of that have been approved so far for this year. So Pilot 4E is one that's come up. Warhawk's another for some trade names. Those are the only two I know of that have been registered in Minnesota this year. So if someone's looking at those products, it's maybe going to be a little more limited supply possibly. So it's looking like a pretty narrow toolbox. The only other insecticide we have is Steward or Endoxcar. So there's only three insecticides we can rotate through in that case. And one of the new recommendations is every 3 years, basically in that cycle, only apply one insecticide once per year at most, and then rotate to one of the other ones. So if you're having to spray twice in 1 year, you're already limited in the toolbox that's left there just because of these resistance concerns. So that's kind of the short version of what's going on with alfalfa weevil, with the problems we're facing there. So if you want to be out there scouting, be sure to be doing that before cutting. Use the threshold tables if you can do that. If it is just after cutting, be sure to look at that stubble, especially if you didn't get those windrows raked up, pretty quickly. There can be some feeding underneath there. You can do what we call stubble scouting. And in that case, it's about 8 larvae per square foot on the ground, especially if there are these big alfalfa weevil larvae, later instars. In those cases, they might be able to survive a little bit more, might cause some more damage. And that has caught some people off guard there. So, Claire, I don't know if you have any thoughts on kind of what you're seeing in your neck of the woods or hearing about from other folks there on the alfalfa pest side of things.
Yeah, I haven't heard in kind of the Rice Dakota County area, I haven't really heard of people having alfalfa weevil issues, but I was just going to ask Anthony if you could remind us the timing of when we should be scouting and maybe when the most damage might occur too.
Sure. So we do have some resources online. There'll be some links provided there. We do some phenology or degree days for alfalfa weevil. And now this gets a little tricky because some of the models aren't as exact. And this is just for what we call the eastern strain of alfalfa weevil. There is potentially another strain coming in. But the short version of that is for alfalfa weevil, at least this eastern strain we've had in Minnesota normally. We scout up until larvae are basically developing into pupae. So that's basically the stage right before they turn into adults. If it's pupal stage or adult, they're not feeding on the alfalfa essentially. They might be a little bit of feeding from the adults. They don't cause economic damage. It's not worth trying to manage those adults. So basically, once you don't find larvae anymore, you don't have to be scouting. So right now, when we look at the degree days, that pupal stage is should be showing up roughly in northern Iowa right now, or at least as of Monday. If we jump ahead to this coming Sunday, that should be June 2nd. It should be just on our southern border, Minnesota, just across the border, that we should be seeing those larvae stop feeding and develop into a pupae there. So we're getting closer, hopefully, to the end of the season. But the problem in this mix here is that western strain, they tend to develop about a week or two later. So I would say we probably have 2 more weeks. You definitely want to be out there scouting, seeing if you have anything. We don't know the status of that Western strain throughout the state, but it was on our Western borders back in the 90s. So it's been a little while. That's some work that could be done in the future there, but that's one just to keep an eye out for that we may be looking at these other strains out there causing some of these issues, where in past years, I've seen damage in fields up to about July 1st. So we could have extended seasons. We'll see with this warmer weather, maybe push development along a little more, and we might see the season end sooner. We don't know yet. So that's why you want to be out there scouting. I would recommend against any just insurance applications on insecticide. Like I mentioned, we have very limited options left. It's a higher chance you're going to burn yourself out in terms of what options you have. Probably not going to get a return on investment in some of these cases if they're doing insecticide applications too early. So just be mindful of that one. We do have parasitoid wasps out there too, I should mention. Those ones do help suppress the populations, but they're susceptible to our broad spectrum insecticides. So that's the catch-22 with some of these. There's a lot of opportunities to do something that are insecticides that may cause problems further down the line. And that's just for alfalfa weevil. I should mention down in Iowa, they've been running a little warmer than us in Minnesota. They had a more continuously warm spring. They had some pretty serious issues with alfalfa weevil a couple weeks ago, but also pea aphid is another one you want to keep an eye out for. I haven't heard reports in Minnesota yet, but considering how thick they were in some fields down in Iowa, definitely something to be out there scouting for because it may be spotty in certain fields, but it's definitely possible we're going to see some that reach some economic thresholds in the state too there.
Yeah, and sometimes we see flare-ups of pea aphid and alfalfa weevil after insecticide applications, like you're saying, Anthony, because then we end up unintentionally, but still killing off the parasitoids. Or are there other natural enemies of alfalfa weevil?
There can be some generalists that would be eating on them too, especially if they fall to the ground. But primarily, USDA actually released some parasitoid wasps that were very specific to alfalfa weevil back in the 70s and 80s, and they did pretty well. Like for me, growing up on our farm, actually, I didn't have to deal with alfalfa weevil very much until the last 5 years or so. And we always wonder, is that maybe the parasitoids helping keep populations down? That's possible, or are we having issues with those parasitoids if populations are dropping for those ones? So there's a lot of unknowns with what's causing all these alfalfa weevil flare-ups. There's a lot of potential options that haven't been explored too well yet. Others look pretty sound, at least for ideas. So we're keeping an eye on what may be happening with alfalfa weevil across the state. And hopefully in the next year or two, we'll have a little more capacity to do some testing on these pyrethroid resistance questions. We're gonna see what goes on with that one there. One thing I do want to mention too is we do, or that we have some resources for alfalfa growers out here too. So the alfalfa scissor cut program, if you haven't heard of that, that's one where you can get an idea what's going on across the state, especially central Minnesota, some southern counties, just to see what they're reporting for height, maturity, and so on. So I know at least as of May 23rd, around Stearns County at Freeport, we're looking at heights about 23 inches tall, bud stage for alfalfa. But you get further south, a lot of folks have been cutting already too. So if anyone's interested in that, they can look that one up. I think we'll have links provided in the description for that one too there. So that's definitely one of the resources you want to make sure alfalfa growers have. Talking about a lot of our other crops sometimes, but definitely this time of year, it's a lot of folks know it's the time we're really thinking about alfalfa if you're growing it.
Thanks, Anthony. Before we hand it over to Brad, we have a question that's in the bug world, kind of entomology related, but off the alfalfa weevil topic. So if you want to answer live here, you can. Otherwise, you can type in the Q&A. But do we expect that we might see more pressure from western corn rootworm and/or northern corn rootworm in corn this year?
Yeah, that's possible. And I talk a lot about insect forecasting a lot of times. And the angle I'll talk about is, we had a warm winter and we really, even though we had a bare soil basically most of the winter, it wasn't a case where we really plunged down in temperature. So a lot of those insects that were in the soil, they're pretty either protected or they really weren't stressed too much by the winter. So if you are in a field where you had high populations last year, winter wouldn't have helped you out necessarily. So if you're in a high risk situation this year, it's probably going to be the same. For folks that have some low level populations, it's possible. But yeah, that's one where you just want to be out there keeping an eye each year, especially later in the season, trying to see what emergence you get. And I know Bruce mentioned here too that we might actually see larvae drowning. We always like to talk about that. If we get a lot of rain, that's very stressful on these soil-borne insects here. So that's one where you get pathogens in there or just enough water that it actually makes it tough to actually get enough oxygen in there too. So we'll see what happens with that one there. It's going to be pretty variable. I know some parts of the state we got some pretty heavy rain, might get some help there. Others, if it's more moderate, I wouldn't bet too much on that wiping out the corn rootworm issues there, but keep an eye on those, especially as adults begin to start emerging there, and you might see them in other fields too.
Thanks, Anthony. We'll hand things over to Brad for our updates around nutrient management.
All right, thanks, Claire. Been getting a lot of calls since it's been so wet the last week or two now about whether we've lost nitrogen. Probably the short answer is yes, although I don't know how much it's been in a lot of cases. I think everybody's aware that we've had three very dry years in a row. Last year we had actually kind of similar conditions to what we're experiencing now in that it got extremely wet early in the year. Although last year was a little different because it came pre-plant, and so it was slightly earlier, the soils were cooler, and it delayed planting. A lot of the rainfall this year, of course, happened during the planting time, and there were adequate windows to get most of the crop planted. But the timing of that was a little bit different. Either way, in both cases, we've reached field capacity both years. Most of our soils, if they're heavier textured soils, our clay loam soils, our glacial soils, will hold about 10 to 12 inches of water. And so anything excess of that, it's either going to percolate through the soil into the drain tile, or it's going to run off across the surface. And so kind of gives us a starting point as far as where we expect the moisture or the water, soil water situation to be in the profile. That's significant because the loss processes of nitrogen are water-based. And so either nitrogen, when it turns to nitrate, well, first of all, it has to turn to nitrate for either of these processes to happen. The nitrate molecule, being negatively charged, does not adhere to the soil. So as water percolates through the soil, it will move with the water downward. How much? Well, it's going to just depend on a lot of factors, but kind of a rule of thumb that we use is that nitrate will move down about 6 inches in the soil profile for every inch of drainage that we've had. So you can kind of look at the where you're at as far as field capacity and how much rain fell. It's hard to know how much ran off and how much is going through the drain tile, but you can figure that some of that nitrogen probably did move. It's pretty safe to say that almost all of the nitrogen that was applied this year is in the nitrate form now. It's been warm enough, and enough time has passed that probably is the case. Obviously, anybody that's left, split applying and still has part of their nitrogen to put on, that'll be a different story. But if you put the full amount on pre-plant, it's probably all in the nitrate form. And so the other process, in addition to leaching, is denitrification. And that's a biological process that happens when the soil is completely saturated. As with anything that's biological in nature, it takes time to get going. It doesn't start immediately. The microbes that do this conversion take some time to get functioning and to multiply in the soil. Typically speaking, the first 24 or 48 hours, we don't see a lot going on. And as with anything that's biological, it also is temperature dependent. And so the warmer the soils are, the greater the amount of loss we would see through denitrification. Denitrification is a process where that nitrate turns into nitrogen gas and then just goes off into the atmosphere and is lost. So usually, because again, it's biological and a lot of it doesn't happen when the soils are cold, we don't look at that as being a significant loss process prior to planting because the soils typically are cold at that point in time. The average date we hit 50 degrees soil temperature at the Southern Research and Outreach Center in Waseca is May 1st, and most microbes don't do much when it's below 50 degrees. But now we are in a situation where the soil temperatures are much warmer. If you want to figure that a lot of our nitrogen has moved down to maybe 8 inches deep or 10 inches deep, we see that the 8-inch soil temperature at Waseca is probably in the vicinity of 65 degrees right now. And so that is warm enough to see some significant activity. So if you look at, there's been some fundamental research done over the years If the soil is completely saturated at 4 days, we can see that the loss of nitrogen is about 6% at 60 degrees, but it doubles to 12% when it gets to 70 degrees. If it's saturated for 10 days, the loss is either 12% at 60 degrees, or more than doubles at 26% at 70 degrees. And so really it's kind of important to kind of keep track of that. Fortunately, the total saturation part of this is, primarily low in the landscape. It's not field wide. In a lot of cases, unfortunately, we've received enough water that the places we're going to see se severe denitrification are also the places that drown out. So you probably don't have a crop there to worry about whether it needs nitrogen or not. The place where this is going to get real severe, looking forward, is if the soil temperatures will continue to warm, but if it stays saturated as we get into June, when the soil temperature approaches 80 degrees, you can lose almost half your nitrogen if the soil stays saturated for 10 days. Now, 10 days is a long time. We don't see that happen very often, but it can happen. Now, the other side of this is, because of how dry it's been the last few years, there has been a fairly significant, in a lot of cases, accumulation of soil nitrate that would normally be lost on an annual basis. We know from analyzing soil samples that were sent into Minnesota Valley Testing Labs last year that a large portion of them had residual nitrates kind of above what we normally see. There's usually a kind of a background level that's up to about 6 parts per million that we don't really worry about because it's kind of always there. After a drought, because the loss processes of nitrogen are water-based, when there's no water, we will see more nitrogen accumulate. And so if you took a pre-plant soil test and you credited that amount of nitrogen, you reduced your application rate, you're probably cutting it close, and I would be watching very closely what the soil conditions are to see if this is maybe a problem for you. However, if you didn't credit that, there's a good chance that what you've been losing so far is some of that accumulated nitrate left over from last year, that probably was not part of your fertility program in the first place, and so it's probably not of a lot of consequence. I guess really it's going to kind of depend on where we go moving forward. Kind of a couple of rules of thumb this time of year, we use as kind of a standard value for evapotranspiration. That's the amount of water we evaporate from the soil surface or use by the plant, at about a tenth of an inch a day. When the corn plants are this small, bean plants are this small, they don't take up a lot of water. So most of that's just kind of what we evaporate on a daily basis. So it takes about 10 days to lose about an inch of water just through that method. It goes up to about doubles when we get to V6, but of course we're not quite there yet in most places. So you can kind of keep track of the moisture status in that way. Now, I think the other thing of this is I heard somebody from the state climatology office this morning talking about the potential for a high pressure ridge setting up, which I think most of us that have paid attention know that has the tendency to push rain away from us here. And so it is possible it's going to just simply dry out now over the next couple of weeks, and probably not of a lot of consequence at that point if that does happen. However, if it does continue to rain, we are going to have to keep closer track of this.
Thanks, Brad. Yeah, lots to think about on the moisture front, and kind of changing gears a little bit, but yeah, how should we think about our timing for split applications? What are your thoughts or research on that? Does it have to be at V4 like we hear sometimes, or?
No, there's kind of a misnomer out there that you want to spoon feed the crop. There's really no such thing as spoon feeding. Nitrogen in the soil knows no freshness. The plant does not tell the difference between whether you put it on yesterday or it was just simply there from a fall application. It's either there or it's not there. And so from that standpoint, if you're going to be putting on split applied nitrogen once we get to this time of year, just simply simply do it when you can get out and the field conditions are adequate, because you're only talking the difference of a week or 10 days timing. The odds of losing nitrogen in that period of time are very small. So just simply get out and get the side dress on as soon as you can. Of course, it's too wet for that in most places right now. But I would guess, based on kind of what I'm seeing as far as field conditions in most places, I would bet we're going to start seeing that in about a week.
Thanks. Yeah. Should we be thinking at all about like collecting tissue samples to help diagnose potential nutrient deficiency later on? Or what are some things to keep in mind if we do think we should collect
Well,
samples?
the problem with tissue testing is a lot of the experience we've had with that shows that there's some pretty big differences simply based on the genetic background of a corn plant. And so unless you've got some numbers perhaps supplied to you by the company that you bought seed from, it's very hard to be very precise. In a lot of cases, it'll tell you if we just simply don't have enough, or if we've got adequate. But then in the middle, if you want to know, well, do I need some, rate more? We're not calibrated to do that. Similarly, an in-season soil test that's become more popular lately. Technically, University of Minnesota doesn't have that as a recommended practice. However, Dan and Fabian have been doing quite a bit of research on that the last couple of years. What Dan has said is he is fairly confident if you take a 1 foot soil test this time of year in this with a standing crop, if the if you get back a result that is 26 parts per million soil nitrate or higher, you have adequate fertility to grow the crop. You do not need to supplement it. And that's, again, when we get below that, exactly trying to calibrate the, at what soil test level you need what rate, that gets more difficult. However, it is a tool you can use if you feel like you put the full rate of nitrogen on and you're worried that you don't have enough left. You can, when it's the conditions get better, you can get out and take a 1 foot test. And again, if it's above 26, you can feel fairly comfortable that you probably have enough nitrogen out there to grow the crop.
So the soil tests more so than the
Correct.
plant tissue tests makes
Correct.
sense.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Any questions for Brad at all? We're coming up on our time here. Or Brad, if you have any other final thoughts or I don't know, we could
The
anything
only, I
left.
guess the only thing, other thing I would say, Claire, is you can kind of keep an eye on your drainage systems if you want to. We usually recommend drainage design for southern Minnesota being at a half inch drainage coefficient. However, a lot of drain tile went in a long time ago at 100 feet apart, which is not a half inch. And then farmers, seeing that that was not adequate, just simply went in and split the lines. Half inch drainage coefficient in most of our glacial soils, like a Webster soil or a Glencoe soil, a Le Sueur soil, something like that, is about 60 feet apart. And if you shorten that up to 50 feet, which might have been what happened if you split 200 foot lines, that actually goes up to 3/4 of an inch. That's the amount of water it'll take away in 24 hours. And so you can kind of look at how much rain falls from the sky and how well the tile is flowing and kind of get a feel for how much water is coming out of your field. That's one more little tool you can use for trying to estimate whether you might have lost some nitrogen.
Thanks. Yep. No, that's a good thought there. And I have a question in the chat here of if there are any worries where water has been standing in fields for nitrogen loss. You touched on that a little bit, but do people need to think about putting more down?
Well, again, I think a lot of what I've seen, the places where I'm worried about that we've had a lot of nitrogen loss, we've also got drawn out crops. And so I guess the key there is does it dry out fast enough you're going to replant? I mean, at this point, we're heading into June. Are you going to get corn back out there? I don't know. I mean, if you do, you probably do need to think about putting some nitrogen on with that. If you got the ability to put a high rate of starter on with the planter, that probably will supplement what was lost in those areas. I guess as far as if it wasn't wet enough to kill the crop, I personally, unless you really shaved it tight on rates. And I know there's a crowd of people out there who really like to play it tight with that. You know, our university recommendations have kind of crept up towards about 150 pounds an acre for corn following soybeans. You know, if you're still putting on 110, 120, you might be kind of tight, you know, but if you were at 150, which is kind of where our recs are, I don't think you're probably going to be in a lot of trouble yet.
Thanks for that thought. And we'll wrap up here. And I just want to thank everyone for attending our University of Minnesota Extension Field Notes program and thank our sponsors, the Soybean Research and Research and Promotion Council and the Corn Research and Promotion Council.